Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Tina Horn, and this is Why Are People Into That? Did you have a good Valentine's Day? Now, I'm personally more of a stay at home and listen to Bjork and drink whiskey and curse the Hallmark invention of romance kind of girl, but you know, it takes all kinds. I hope you did all your sexy shopping at smittenkittenonline.com, and if you didn't, it's still winter and you are still horny. So, I suggest you treat yourself to some sex toys from Smitten Kitten already. March is going to be a really exciting month for the podcast. We're going to record live in front of an audience March 15th at Catalyst Con, the sex-positive sex education conference. Our confirmed guest is going to be my hero, Dr. Carol Queen, and a bunch of other super rad babes will also be podcasting, including Tristan Taormino and Susie Q and Char Renoir. I know we'll be posting all about our shenanigans, so follow all of us on the internets, or if you're in the DC area, you can still register at catalystcon.com. Thanks for tuning in to part two of our second episode. Part two finds executive pervert Melina Williams and myself deep in a dirty discussion about role play. We get into some very juicy stories of Melina's escapades as a pretty pony and an incredible tale about protesting a kinky slave auction by making things a little bit more real. Thanks for listening, and hey, if you like Why Are People Into That? Then please like Why Are People Into That on Facebook and follow at Into That Podcast on Twitter and write us a nice review on iTunes or just click that little star and let us know what you think. I know you've been waiting for part two of episode two, so here it is. Why are people into role play? About costumes, because I can say that I personally rarely feel the need to use a costume, but I know that I'm not hating on people who do, you know, I know that, but for a lot of people that's not only fun, but for some people it's crucial or integral.
Especially if you're a fetishist, right? If you are if you are a straight up fetishist, you know, and I mean that in the pure sense where the object gives you sexual pleasure.
Right.
You gotta have the costume.
Yeah.
You know, if you are...
And it's gotta be rubber, it can't be vinyl. Or gotta be vinyl, it can't be rubber.
It's
whatever,
gotta be leather, it can't be anything else.
Right,
you know. The good thing about costuming is that I feel that it can inspire you. Conscious, because I think that so much about BDSM and kink in the public community is about financial access to stuff.
Right.
I try to stress to people, you do not need to run out and buy stuff.
Right.
You absolutely don't. However, if taking a bandana and putting it into your mouth and pretending it's a horsey bit and taking a couple of bits of rope and looping them over your head so that now you can pretend you're a pony, if that helps you to get into that headspace, then fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have $700 or $800 to buy a head and ears and a special butt plug. Those things are nice, but you don't have to have them.
Right.
Costuming is great because I know that for me, it's a touchstone. It helps me to remember where I am. So if I'm in the middle of a scene, I start to float away. I'm like, wait a second. Huh. I'm dressed like, I have these ears, I have this thing in my mouth. Right, pony. You know, and that sort of grounds me in whatever I am doing. Plus, sometimes the visual arousal, the visual stimulation of having someone in an outfit or wearing an item that really turns you on is really beneficial to the rest of the scene. You know, if someone is, you know, for me, for example, single tail whips are a big fucking deal, because I tell you, the first time I saw or heard a single tail whip being used was watching Roots. And so I have a very visceral reaction when I hear them. And initially it was not good. It was not a good reaction. I can now take a step back and say, wow, that's a very strong reaction. It's not the most positive reaction. Can I use that reaction? Especially if I'm doing a scene that involves terror or fear.
Yeah.
And I tell the person I'm playing with, if you crack a fucking bullwhip behind my head, a lot happens. You know, I remember going to a dungeon and seeing all these women, like, writhing and moaning, all these submissions, like, oh my God, I get so turned on, I can come just from listening to whip. I'm like, really? Because I just think of Kunta Kinte. Needle off the record. Suddenly everyone's like, buzzkill mall. I'm like, well, that's my fucking truth. So step to me if you don't like it. Really? Really? And so that idea of having a thing or an object or an item that really puts you in that place is fantastic. You know, costuming was what allowed me to even access doing what to me seemed like the furthest out role play, which is animal role play.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that I, at first, when I first heard about it many years ago, when I was in high school, I remember seeing this thing about, like, Pony Girls, or where these all these pornographic cartoons.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, I can see where it's yet another thing where men just want women to not be human.
Right.
So fuck you with your oppressive shit.
And the truth, of course, just with all of this stuff is yes and.
And yes.
Yeah.
And so I had sort of just dismissed it. I didn't really get it. And then when I got involved in kink, I had a couple of friends who were pony people, and they looked adorable.
Yeah.
And they were obviously having so much fun with it. And I was like, well, they seem to like it. And then you hear about furries, and you're like, okay, so now they're wearing... The thing about furries that baffled me, the only thing, is how do they stand being so sweaty? Like, I was like, oh my God, you're just hot all the time, aren't you sweating? Like, that was my big obsession. That's the first thing I ask. What about the sweat?
That's how I feel about latex bodysuits, actually. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I don't get it. And then I was at, back in San Francisco, they had the fetish flea, which would happen at the time, I think, quarterly.
Yeah.
Quarterly, I think it was.
At the Citadel, right?
Lady Thorn. Before it was at the Citadel, it was at the Women's Building. And before it was at the Women's Building, it was somewhere else that I can't remember. Castle Bar, I think.
Mm.
Back when Castle Bar was still around. And so you go in, and it's this amazing wonderland with all this stuff. And I'm walking by this one booth, and they have these gorgeous pony outfits. And, of course, as an actor, I'm like, look at this costuming.
Yeah.
And, of course, as a poor person, I'm like, look at the price tag.
Right. Intersectionality. Actor, poor person.
And so a friend of mine comes up, and she's like, oh, you would look so good in this, and picks up this thing. It was unusual. Still have never seen one like it. It was a... what is that stuff? Not leather, but suede.
Ah, suede.
It's a suede pony mask, like a half pony mask with these ears. And it was almost exactly my skin color. And so I was like, oh, that's really weird. And it had this, like, blonde mane, and I was like, ugh. And she's like, try it on. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna. And of course, then the vendor's like, oh, Mo, you gotta try it on. And because I'm not at all an attention whore, I was like, okay, fine.
That pony peer pressure will get you
so every time. I put on the fucking head thing, and I'm standing there, and I'm like, wow, this is actually kind of cool. And I'm thinking, this would be a great piece if you did Kinky Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
How kick-ass would that be if suddenly Titania is riding bottom around in a pony play scene, right? And
that would be where your mind goes.
Which is super hot. Remind me someday to tell you about my BDSM take on Taming of the Shrew that I'm going to fucking do.
I can't wait.
It's going to be so rad. So my friend then takes the reins, throws them over my head, and jumps on my back. Now, mind you, she's a tiny little woman.
Yeah.
And I have a big butt. So she just, like, climbs on. Because she's used to actually riding actual horses, so she can climb on anything. And it's, like, kicking me in the fucking, like, in the shins. My shins. Going, like, whatever. And I'm like, what? And I'm standing there, like, are you kidding me? But, of course, I'm a game person. So I said, fine. So I start walking around the flea with this chick on my back and this pony head on. And the first thing that happens is someone walks up to us. And says, oh, what a pretty pony.
Oh, I bet you did make a very pretty pony.
And pets me. Here's the thing. You don't touch me without permission.
Right.
And so my first reaction was, who the fuck? Like, I was ready to kick this person. I was like, are you serious? Now, my experience in the scene was not a lot about harassment. People never... I know that this is a reality for a lot of people, is that they get touched and groped and fondled and horrible things happen to them. My experience has not been like that. I had not had anyone lay hands on me non-consensually ever.
Yeah.
Since then, even in, like, the past 18 years, maybe twice.
Yeah.
So to have someone walk up, someone who I knew peripherally, and start touching me was shocking. And I was so shocked that I didn't say anything. Because I was like, oh my God, how dare you? And then my friend is on my back, says, oh my God, isn't she pretty? And she's like, say hi, princess, and starts jerking on my halter. And I'm like, meh. And then someone else goes, oh my God, I didn't know Mo did pony play. And suddenly there's like 10 people gathered around, like petting me. Someone takes like a fucking like snack bar out of their purse. And they're like, can I give her a treat? And my friend's like, yeah, she loves treats. And I don't even know what it was. It was like, it was some sort of like peanut butter bar. I hate peanut butter. I hate it. But she puts it in front of me and I'm like, sniff, sniff, sniff. And then I start eating it. And they're like, oh, precious. And then I'm walking around some more. And by the end, it was maybe half an hour I spent just walking around. I was high.
Yeah.
I was high as fuck. And I was like, I didn't have to do anything. And I got all the attention ever. I got the pets. I got the snacks. I got to, like, be useful. I was riding my friend around the thing. And I was pretty. And I got, like, by the end, I'm, like, prancing around and fucking, like, tossing my mane and neighing. And, like, how old are you? I'm like, stomp, stomp, stomp. And I was like, this was the coolest thing ever. And then, of course, I shelved it for the next decade.
Sure.
Because I was like, that's just too ridiculous. I can't. I can give other people permission to be ponies, but I couldn't allow myself to do that. And I got to the point where I felt so guilty about it. At one time, like someone else, a friend of mine had bought this pony thing, and I was like, I want that so bad. And I agonized over it. And then after a week, I said, you are a pervert. You teach internationally.
Yeah.
And you are sitting here feeling bad about wanting to be a pony. What the fuck is wrong with you? Go buy that. At the time, I had, like, a really great job. So I was like, buy the fucking gear. Buy it. And I was like, I hear and obey. So I bought this little head thing. You know, I had a gift certificate from Mr. S. And Mr. S. had to stay on these little rubber hooves. So I got those for, like, only $40. And, you know, finally put together a basic but really cute little pony outfit. And then I had to, like, tell people that I wanted to do it. And then, you know, of course, because my life is hilarious, the first public pony scene I do is with Rebecca Wilcox, who wrote The Human Pony.
Right.
In Sweden at a New Year's Eve party, which was a performance for this huge Swedish fetish ball. And that was my first public pony scene. You know, and
it go was big or go home.
Fucking rad. I was like, this is the best thing ever. And I realized for myself, I said, wow, here's something that's so simple.
Yeah.
That even I had a hard time saying to giving myself permission for. And so I said, okay, because it was so weird, because it was so hard, I will now be public about my, like, hey, pony, pony stuff, pony, pony.
Isn't it amazing also how the more absurd, once you're in the zone, if you will, mm-hmm. the more absurd you can get with your free association, with the character, with the scenario, mm-hmm. with the dynamic, the hotter it is.
Yeah.
Like, right up until the point of orgasm, and then you both come, and then you're like, wow, I was just free associating with whatever, Mr. Ed, My Little Pony, like, any possible thing that you could, like, even what you were just saying with, like, stomping your foot three times, right? It's like, once you're in that context, it all of a sudden becomes a turn-on
yeah.
to say something that somebody else recognizes the reference or recognizes what you're going for. It's extraordinary. It's one of the things I love about Dirty Talk, and it's one of the things that I love about how all of a sudden, you know, a statement completely out of context within a role play
mm-hmm.
can be the hottest thing you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And then it might be hot the next time, or it might be
like, I will never say that again.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the more you give yourself into what seems absurd
right.
and out there, the more satisfying it becomes. You know, I haven't done a lot of pony play, but the scenes that I've done, each and every time I've been shocked at how far into the character I get and how easily.
Yeah.
You know, and then the converse is then I forget that, like, yeah, no, you need aftercare and you need to come back. Because if you're, I mean, I went to Folsom as a pony, and then I had to go and perform later that night, and I was literally wandering around Oakland because I had some time to kill, thinking I should eat. Someone should feed me. I'm hungry. Like, I couldn't
even
walk.
I need a carrot.
I couldn't even walk into a diner because I was waiting for someone to feed me.
Right. Ponies don't walk into diners.
And then I was like, oh no, you have to go and do this. And I was like, okay. You know, that coming back process was piecemeal and was hilarious, because in retrospect, I was like, that's what was happening, is that you were not used to being responsible for yourself, Melina, anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's like what we were saying earlier about aftercare, is that that's part of what we can do for one another, is whatever way we do it, to, like, guide each other slowly mm-hmm. back, and being like, I'm not a pirate. You're not my wench. We're egalitarian. Remember? See? This is the ice cream you like.
I think it's part
and you're
of
like,
reason,
oh, yeah.
I think it's part of the reason that people use costuming.
Right.
Is because when the costume is on.
Right.
Scene on. When the costume is off, you have that as a marker. It doesn't mean that you're going to snap back into reality.
But helps.
It does help you to have a wax on, sort of wax off kind of thing.
That's another thing that I wanted to touch on, is that, you know, sometimes you do a role play and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the role play introduce yourself to a character inside yourself that you want to return to.
Yes.
And so for some people, a role play is a matter of an ongoing scenario or an ongoing character that, you know, maybe you put on the plaid skirt and you're that schoolgirl again, and you're right back, like, in last time on kinky schoolgirl bedroom time.
It's part of the difference, I think, between role with a capital R and role with a small R, right?
Right.
If I have a role in my life as a slave, am I playing a slave? No, I'm owned by that person.
Right.
Does that mean that I would call the person who owns me master in the supermarket? I probably wouldn't want that attention drawn to me, A. B, is my personal ethic that I do not involve non-consensual bystanders in my BDSM. Can I have words that my partner knows mean the same thing?
Right.
Absolutely. You know, if I call my partner Mr. X, they know that that is as formal to me as calling them master, for example. You know, in the dynamic I'm working in right now, we have this kind of delightful daddy-girl thing happening. And we
refer good. That's the punchline of that story. That's good. You went there. That's good.
Yes. And so what's so cool about it is that we will refer to each other as daddy and girl in conversation. That does not stop.
Right.
That is that role of the benign paternal dictator is hot for me. And so I do not want to leave it at the door.
Yeah.
You know? So that role is a role that I embrace, and that encircles the dynamic of our relationship. So it is not on and off.
Right.
In terms of how it is shared with other people, it's on and off. But that's because, you know, I want to be respectful. It does not mean in my heart I stop being, you know, the part of me that is the little girl. The inner child, as you will.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But what's cool about meta role play, which is what how I refer to those things, where the role is not just a role you assume, it is a role you have subsumed, and now you're bringing out. You know? Because we all have those facets within us. We all have that desire to be dominated or to dominate. We have that, you know,
absolutely.
Or both, all at once, whatever. But the thing is about that is that you can take that part of yourself and engage that with another person. And that's so badass, because you don't have to pretend. You know, I know for me, the idea of being able to be that vulnerable little kid is so much of a relief. You don't get that in the default world.
No
one's going to be your fucking daddy and tell you to finish your vegetables.
Right.
But when you're like, I don't want to go to the dentist. I don't want the triple root canal. And daddy's like, if you're a good little girl, you go to the dentist and you'll make daddy very proud. And suddenly, like, everything chills out. And I'm like, okay, Daddy, I will be a good girl and I will go to the dentist. And I do my grown-up shit.
Right.
Because that role that we have both acknowledged works for both of us, that dynamic feeds something in me that needs some fucking food.
And you're the person, you're the grown-up adult with agency mm-hmm. that asked, that gave that person mm-hmm. permission to be the one to say, you go to the dentist and make Daddy proud.
Right, right.
So in a way, you're really being your own daddy. You're just projecting it back onto that person.
And that's what, I think that is what the good thing about power exchange dynamics is that in all sides of the dynamic, the other person is getting a need met based on giving permission and receiving permission.
Right.
You know? And that's the thing about being in service to someone that people are like, oh, well, you know, it's all about the dominant. I'm like, no. No. Dominant needs someone to serve them in order to be dominant. I can serve anybody.
Right.
I can serve a cause. I can serve a mission. I can serve the world. I do community service.
Right.
Teaching is a service. You know, telling stories is a service. But what's great about having this dynamic in place is that the dominant's able to say, I've created a place where your service is valued. And I see it, and I acknowledge it, and I respect it. And that is a yin-yang, ebb-and-flow kind of fucking thing. And it's great for everyone when it happens, because in a consensual situation, everyone's engaged and everyone's feeling good. At the end of the day, everyone goes back to their corner saying, ooh, look how much better my life is for having this person in it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's so fucking kick-ass about it. And if you can do that in the context of meta role plays, right, where you are living in that role because it's what really turns you on and what really fuels you, that's a gift for all the people involved. Because then you can bring out this thing that doesn't necessarily get to come out.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you could sit in your office and pretend to be daddy of all of your department, but that'd be kind of weird.
Yeah.
I think for the people who weren't there. Or you can just do it and not tell people. Every time I've been an executive admin, I've had all kinds of terrible fantasies about the people I've been working for. But, you know, those were my private fantasies.
Yeah.
They did not need to know.
No. That's fine. Well, what are some of your favorite role plays?
I will say that definitely the daddy girl thing is pretty heady for me, because I always had seen an example of age play, and I'll put this under the realm of age play. I've always seen examples of age play that didn't speak to me, because I did not want to talk and baby talk and wear roughly shit.
Right.
I went to a school for quote-unquote gifted kids. I started working in film and TV when I was 5, so I was always treated as an adult.
Right.
From when I was very small. And so the idea of this innocent childhood where coloring was all you did that day is alien to me. So it wasn't until someone said, you know, you can be the kid you were.
Right.
And just change the context of what you're doing as that kid. And I was like, yeah, the kid I was wanted to fuck when she was 5. Like, when I found out what sex was, I was like, I want to do that. I have to wait? Oh, that's forever. Like, telling a 5-year-old they have to wait till they're married. It's like, are you kidding me? That's just not... I was like, I'm not going to wait. I know already that that's not true.
Yeah.
You know? So to be able to have a role play in which precocious me, who was able to carry on a conversation intelligently with any grown up, is also able to say, well, I would like you to do this other thing, Daddy. You know, is super fucked up. So the fucked upness appeals to me, because I'm like, wow, this is wrong. Yeah. But, you know, I am not 5.
Right.
I am, in fact, 44. This is consensual, because this is actually not my dad.
Right.
And the situation has never happened and cannot ever happen and will not ever happen. However, the emotional reality of it is so juicy. And I love being able to dip into that. And this is the second relationship I've had where that sort of very dark role play exploration has happened. So I'm a little bit better at, like, raising my hand and saying, okay, this is what I would like to do. Thank you. Okay, please, can I... all right. You know, where I'm sitting there just like so super embarrassed going, oh my God, they're going to think I'm the most fucked up person ever. But I lucked out in the two people I brought this up with. They were like, great.
It's amazing also how much of an actor you are. Obviously, one, it's, this being a podcast, we can't see, but your entire body language changes when you're like, even giving an example of being the little girl, you start fiddling with your dress. Like, every time you've done it, you fiddle with your dress in the exact same way. And then you're back to being Melina, where you're like gesticulating in the air.
And so, and people get that, right? It's very easy for people to read me when I shift states.
Yeah.
You know, and so that type of role play is great because it's liberating and it's real.
Yeah.
I can remember what I felt like when I was 5, 10, 15, 13, 12, whatever.
Yeah.
And so to bring that to the present day and say, how would that person react in this situation is really hot. So I really love that. Trying to think of the other ones that I really enjoy. I do so love the pony and animal stuff, you know, and I'm always so amazed at how beautifully it works. And it's funny because what I still have not done, and let me tell you, you thought it took me a while to say, I want to be a pony. It took me as long, and then even after I came out as wanting to do pony stuff, another few years before I was able to say, and I would like to have sex. While I'm a pony.
Mm.
And let me tell you, among a lot of pony play people, same way with a lot of age play people, you do not bring sex into that play. It is not okay.
Interesting.
And so I had heard so much anti-sexuality around age play and around pony play that...
You're like, pony wants to fuck.
I know. I was like, would someone please fuck the pony? So I had a friend who I had this, I'll never forget, I was on BART. I was still living in San Francisco, and I had this long text conversation where we were negotiating doing a pony play scene. And she actually is a horsewoman, so she's very accustomed to, grew up around horses. And so I was like, oh, that's great. So this will be really cool for you, blah, blah, going back and forth. And I made some comment about, you know, whether or not I should wear underwear when we're doing the scene. And finally I was like, because, you know, it would be kind of cool, maybe. I'm like, I'm sure that probably this is too weird or too out there, but haha, wouldn't it be kind of funny if, you know, the pony got a carrot in the other end? And she said, oh my gosh, I've always been curious about that. Tee-hee-hee. And I'm like, tee-hee-hee. Like, this entire time, we found this, so we're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to totally do this, like, you know, vet inspection scene. Mm. And there's going to be all kinds of probing and stuff. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so awesome. And we went, and we were at a camp event, and we're outside, and I'm trotting around and doing all this stuff. And she had this, like, inflatable dildo and all this stuff. It's going to be so great. And we did this scene, and it was awesome. But there was no pony fucking. And I didn't think about it, really, in terms of a loss. But then at the end of the scene, when I was coming back down, I said, oh, we didn't play with the dildo stuff. And she looked at me kind of sheepishly and said, sheepishly, see what I did there?
Yeah.
And she said, I couldn't do it.
Wow. She said, you just, the pony.
She said, you just reminded me too much of this pony I had when I was, you know, like the first pony that was like my pony at camp. And... she was so in the headspace of caretaking for an animal that it just didn't happen for her organically.
Lena, you're too convincing of a pony.
And on the one hand, I'm like, well, cool me. On the other hand, I was like, pony still goes unfucked. And that scene especially, that was one of those scenes where I really fully understood the power of that kind of role play, because later that night, I was taking a shower, and I went to wash my hair, and there were these little, like, burrs in my hair. And I was like, how the fuck did these burrs get in my hair? And I had to rewind back through the scene, and I said, oh my God, I rolled on the ground. Now, let us...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Pause, and so that you can fully understand. I grew up here in New York City.
Right. Rolling in the dirt is not...
in the dirt. I don't even picnic in Central Park unless there is a blanket with a perimeter of 3 sheets around it so that I can see the ants coming so that they may die a horrible death before they get to my tender flesh, right? I'm not a... No.
Yeah.
I don't walk barefoot in the grass because I don't trust grass.
Right.
And so when I came to with burrs in my hair, I was like, how the fuck did it even happen? So I spoke to my friend later and I said, I rolled in the grass. She said, yeah, you did. Because I told you to roll. It's time for you to roll. I was like, I rolled in the grass. Like, that's how much I was in that headspace.
It's, I mean...
That doesn't happen in normal life. You don't forget stuff that's core to your identity, like grass and rolling in it.
Oh, it's probably good for you.
But at the time, I was just like, oh, so good. I've been running around so much. All I can do is roll on the grass. Little, like, hooves up in the air, like, this is awesome. May I have another biscuit? Like, that was my whole existence in that moment.
It reminds me of the first time that I went to the Eagle here in New York, mm-hmm. and it was puppy night.
Puppies!
Who doesn't love puppies? And it was sort of, I mean, obviously, I'm familiar with puppy play, mm-hmm. And had, like, maybe witnessed from far some puppy scenes, participated or known some puppies, but in the Eagle, which is a leather bar, with, you know, everybody just doing their bar thing, doing, you know, talking to people, drinking beers, and there are like half a dozen men running around on the ground being puppies and coming up to you, and like they're so in it that it didn't even occur to me to react to this man on his, you know, running around on all fours in any other way than I would react to a friendly puppy in a bar,
right,
who was coming up to me and being like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, he's so cute, and like rubbing him, and of course he's reacting like, yes, oh, he's, you know, such a good dog, and patting him on the rump and all these things, and he just loved it. And then he ran away, you know, and it's he, I know nothing about this person, but like, clearly being able to embody being a puppy and having people getting the reaction out of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't even think to myself,
oh God, oh, this now is, I have to go and do this thing with this guy.
Yeah. Nope. Or like I, or the, oh, should I react to this man dog in a way that I would react differently to a dog? There was just something about the dynamic that with me, like, you know, this person is a perfect stranger to me.
Yeah.
I'm reacting to him the way that I would to a friendly dog, and it was, and it, something clicked in my mind about, right, about puppy play.
You're just
that
like,
night.
Hey, you know what? That might not be a cis dog, but I'm going to respect. Gonna respect his trans dog status.
Exactly. So I can imagine the pony thing too.
It's so fucking badass. You know, the other thing that's really hilarious is that, like, I identify as sexually bisexual, sexually queer, sexually asexual. You know, I hate to say bisexual because I'm like, well, there's just is the
more than two.
It's more than two, and there's so many. So I'm just sexual. I'm people sexual.
Sure.
Right. I get attracted to certain people. My pony, though, is a big old dyke. Has no interest in guys at all. And not just that. Like, they have to be, like, cute little perky chicks. Who the fuck knows what that's about?
Well, right. I mean, it's so interesting when you go into a, you go into a persona and you spend time as the persona and you learn things about the persona that you're like, I didn't choose this. I didn't sit down and say, okay, this character in this improv is going to have, you know, like, this orientation,
right, right,
and this background and, like, this kind of biscuit, you know. It's just, it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's magic.
And so that's super, that's just so rad. And the fact that I'm able to really get into that in a way that feels seamless is fantastic, you know. And it's entirely 180 degrees from the filthy transgression that I feel when I do the daddy girl stuff. Because that just feels dirty and terrible.
Yeah. In the best way.
In the best possible way.
Are there other role plays that you've done that you've really loved?
I will say that I've loved in ways that have been challenging are the role plays that I've done around racial stuff.
Yeah.
I guess it's a role play I did for my fantasy for International Miss Leather when I ran for that contest.
And won.
I did, yes.
And served.
And served for
it was 2010?
2010, yes. After being Miss San Francisco Leather in 2009. And the fantasy part, which basically you have to do a little skit. I mean, there's no other way to describe it except you have to do a skit.
Right, it's a skit.
And so my skit was pretty much an interpretive dance about the, what's the word? When you reclamation of the sort of mammy... the mammy persona, you know. And actually, I have a link on my website to an illegal video that my bro Q took of the fantasy. And thank you for Q, because otherwise it would have been lost to history because of the twice it was performed. Neither time were the official video tapes taping.
Oh my god.
So
Q's, the tapes were like, this is too edgy for me.
Q's camera phone footage is all that exists. But in short, basically, I came out in this completely traditional, like, floor-length white, you know, the skirt with a poofy white shirt and the head rag and the mammy thing, you know, chained to these shackles. And I'll never forget, like, the gasps that go up from the audience when I come out, because people, first of all, you know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
And no one feels super great about it.
And they know what it means for you to be doing it. Or they don't, actually, I guess, is really what it is.
A lot of people know. Some people think they know. And then some people are just, they're aware it's transgressive. They're aware that for me, as the person I am today, to assume that role is problematic.
Yeah.
So no matter what you're thinking, that's a role that is a difficult one to embody.
Yeah.
And then the music that I chose... was a beautiful rendition of Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is pretty much the Black National Anthem.
Right.
Very powerful among African-American people. And so that starts. And then people who know what the song is, they're completely baffled and on the edge of upset. You know? And so the dance basically was about my, you know, freeing myself from these chains and then doing what then becomes this sassy burlesque.
Nice.
Of stripping off the head rag and flinging off the blouse and unwrapping the skirt. And underneath it, I'm wearing this leopard print push-up bra and this latex skirt.
Oh my god, amazing.
And people are, like, screaming and freaking out. Like, as it goes, they start to get it. And then the last act, like, as the music, like, comes to this climax, is I pick back up the shackles and put them back on with this, like, you know, power fist salute. And people are like, ah! You know, because... what that, to me, the whole point of it for me was, here's a role that was forced on me, that is still forced on me today.
Yeah.
You don't see that this is how I'm seen, but this is the reality of my life. So, okay, I'm going to deconstruct it and then make it my own.
Yeah.
And that's to me what's so powerful about doing play around race, is that I can take the slurs and the insults and the deprecation and the horror... and say, I acknowledge it because I still live it. But it is not the boss of me as I live today. And again, that's a meta role thing. That's a larger concept that is not necessarily easy to tease out from daily life, because it is daily life, for God's sake. But then I can say, okay, fine, I get it. I am the fat black mammy. I see what you're doing here. But you know what? I am also sexy and I'm a sexual creature, and I'm going to use that against you and for myself. Relating it to roles, that role is one, like I said, that has certainly been applied to people who look like me for hundreds of years in this country. To an extent, desexualized. or hypersexualized, whatever that is, wherever you want to place that in that continuum. I love doing that kind of play. And actually, I know that people refer to play as play, but some people also refer to play as work. I love doing that kind of work because to me, it feels empowering. And to me, it enables me to look at those images and say, those were women like me. I don't need to distance myself from that imagery. I don't need to other that. I don't need to say, this is a shameful thing. I'm like, they were me. That's me.
Ooh.
There's no gap aside from time. These were women who were as intelligent and as fierce and as powerful as I am and living in different circumstances. And so that enabled me to see the role of Black women in this country as mine. And we don't get to own much. And so owning that, to me, was very powerful. And the fact that I still get people, and this was, what, 3 years ago? Now 4 years ago. Who still come up to me and were like, I saw you do that at, you know, SF Leather. I saw you do that at IMSL. You know, this is one so great. These, like, three huge, hard dykes came up to me, like, with tears in their eyes. And they were like, yeah, your fantasy really was moving. And, yeah, thank you for that. Nice. And another friend of mine told me that she was with these jaded old queens who were sitting in the back with tears running down their face because they got it. And this was, for example, like several of these men were men who were in their 50s and 60s. So generationally, you're looking at them having a different relationship to what oppression looks like versus younger gay men, you know. And so people saw it and made it their own in a way. In a way that I think is fantastic, because that's what performance is fucking about. It's what roles play is about. It's about taking something that isn't yours and finding out where you live in it. And so for me, that type of role play is great because it enables me to say, I will never know what it's like to actually be a chattel property in the antebellum South in the U.S. Can I do a scene where someone is treating me that way and get like three breaths of what it might have felt like just sort of coasting through my genes? Yes. And that is, that's actual magic. That's, you know, what conjuring spirits is about. And that's what roleplay does, is that you are pulling up spirit and energy that doesn't exist in the current state and you make it happen. You know, and so if I pretend to be the runaway slave and I have someone like yank me by the hair and throw me down and beat me as punishment, I get to walk away from that. The reality is people who looked like me did not. And people who were my ancestors did not. And so for me to be able to explore that in a relatively safe environment is an incredible honor. And I respect that type of role play because it is very profound. And so when I say I enjoy, I don't use words like enjoy and like. Mm. And for me personally, and this is my opinion, and I'm doing my little disclaimer dance. Those people who have seen my classes, I have a thing that I do where I establish that if I'm saying something that I believe very strongly, but it's just my opinion, here's my little dance, so you know to take it with a grain of salt. Da 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 da. You know, I have a hard time with people who do that type of play as a lark.
Yeah.
People who are just like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a lynching scene. It's going to be super awesome, you guys. I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, I just got this great Nazi uniform. I'm like, oh dear. Okay. Okay. Look, if you're going to do that kind of stuff, you know, and I understand that we have this whole laissez-faire, your kink is okay sort of atmosphere. And I personally very strongly feel like, no, there are some things that are very emotionally charged and deep, and there are wounds to the psyche of humanity, and if you're going to go fucking around in there, you had better be fucking serious. And I believe that very strongly.
Disclaimer dance.
Disclaimer dance. You know, and of course, do what you want to do, but if you do that in front of me, I'm gonna question you.
Yeah.
I'm going to question that, because I feel like you should know what sort of energy you're pulling up, and especially if you're doing it in public. If you're doing it in the public community, you're at a local dungeon and you march in there in your Nazi uniform, think because it's cool because you can. You are conjuring ghosts. And you might not be ready for the energy that you unleash.
There are also, there are so many different, I feel like a lot of role plays can be reduced down to fundamental scenarios and fundamental archetypes in the characters. And, you know, maybe if you think that you want to do an Auschwitz role play, that maybe you should just, like, do a little bit of like, non-consensual, just basic non-consensual stuff first. Like, maybe some light serial killer play before you move on to Nazi torture play, you know? But because all of these, I guess what I'm trying to say is that a lot of them have to do with fundamental dynamics of what? Of consent and non-consent, of, you know, the
power loss
of power loss and seduction and, all of these.
And that goes back to the meta question of your series, which is why.
Yeah, why?
If you are going to do something that is deeply edgy and that has representational markers that are challenging, why is your desire, and I've seen this happen in the scene, in the King scene especially, where people are like, I just want to squick the room. You know, I want to see people react. And I think that that's poor manners.
Poor form.
You know, I think that that's not cool. I think that if you absolutely need to see that swastika in order for you to have that visceral reaction, I get it. However, consider your surroundings. Consider the whys.
Well, it's like what you were talking about calling somebody daddy in the grocery store. because there are certain things in a dungeon that you are expecting to be exposed to when you're there. And there are some things that reasonably you should expect to not have to see today, like a swastika.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, again, when I talk to people about role play stuff and I say, consider your audience and consider if your reason for performing this in front of that audience is to stun or shock them.
Yeah.
And have they given consent to be a part of your scene in that way? They have consented to bear witness because they're at that event, but only to a certain extent.
Right.
You know,
also a little selfish because it's like, don't pay attention to your scene, pay attention to my scene.
Right.
Me.
You know, and I will say, you know, as I say this, that I will turn around and tell on myself, well, I broke my own rule and did a role play that was specifically politically motivated. Because I have an issue, long-term issue, with people holding slave auctions at kink events. Not that I think it's bad, but I think it's unexamined. And you're not actually auctioning off slaves.
Right.
You're having a scene auction, a top-bottom auction. Call it that.
Yeah.
A slave auction has a very specific connotation.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible one.
Yeah.
And I've had this discussion over the years with lots of different people. And generally, the reaction has been, I never thought about it that way. And I'm like, great. Look at your privilege.
And now you have. Now you are.
Now you have heard that there are some of us who are saying, you know, can you consider this? Is it so, is your calling it a slave auction more important than the fact that the history that you're talking about is kind of grim? Just a little. You know. And I've had a bunch of different event promoters say, hey, wow, okay. And now call them top-bottom auctions or whatever. And then some people who've said, fuck you, Moby, don't care, and continue to call them slave auctions. And I was at the latter such event at one point, and I was kind of annoyed. They were like, standing there like, oh, the slave auction. And I turned to a table full of other presenters, and I said, that's shit. You know, you said, you know what I've always wanted to do? Is I've always wanted to be like, oh, you want a slave auction? Let's have one. Let's do this. And a friend of mine looks up and says, oh, I'm the auctioneer tonight. What did you have in mind? And then a bunch of other friends are like, oh, can we help? And so finally we had a whole scenario, right? And so in the middle of this pavilion where there were like a couple hundred people gathered for the top bottom auction and people are standing up there and, you know, they're like, oh, the next person to be auctioned off. And this little girl gets up with her little like skirt and she's showing her ass, and another top gets up and he's all like, look at my dominus. And then like about halfway through the auction, you hear me at the back of the pavilion screaming, no mass assar, please don't sell me down the river, sir. And people are like, this slow take, like, what the fuck is happening? And so I had, you know, a friend of mine do this, like, you know, terrible sloppy tie, and he's dragging me up, and another friend of mine is up there with her little floppy straw hat and her long skirt, and she's like, well, this is my slave, and I've been trying so hard to keep her under control, and she just won't. In the meantime, like, you know, my other friend is, like, pulling my mouth open, like, you know, the auctioneer is like, you know, come inspect her teeth, and the audience is like, the air had been sucked out of the entire campsite. Like, just dead fucking silence. And then the DJ, bless his heart, and I do not know why, this motherfucker had some fucking Negro spirituals on his goddamn iPod, like, throws down some, like, you know, Mahalia Jackson, starts coming through the speakers, and I'm, like, crawling away from them, and they're kicking me and pulling me back, and no one's bidding. And so finally, I was like, and then my brain is like, none of these motherfuckers are going to bid. This is going to be so embarrassing. So I'm like, what's the exit strategy? So in my head, I'm like, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to resolve this. And then someone did start bidding, and then the bidding happened, and someone did finally win. And this guy comes up and does a few minutes of negotiation with my friend, because that's what we agreed on. We said, you can, here's what we're going to agree to, that they can do, you know,
right,
an impact play scene with the following instruments, whatever. So this guy grabs me by the hair, like, yanks me out to this bench right...
Can I ask if this guy's white?
Yes.
Yeah.
Drags me out to this bench right next to the pavilion, so people can still see in here while the auction is still going on. And, like, yanks my hair back and goes, are you cool? And I'm like, yes. And he goes, great. Then he bends me over, like, ties me to this bench and goes, I am so disappointed in you. Have I not been a good master? Have I not shown you the same kindness that I show my other slaves? Did I not give you Christmas off to see your family? And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. So he proceeds to beat the shit out of me, doing this whole calm and evil thing the whole time. Meanwhile, I'm screaming, crying. Everyone can still see and hear all this going on through the rest of the auction, right? And this is great. After we did our scene, he's like, whoa, are you cool? I'm like, yeah, that was great. He goes, oh my God, I've never done anything like that. And I said, you did so good. He goes, well, I am an actor. I'm like, oh my God, me too. So we have this whole great connection. He was really great. We're to this day still friends. And,
Well, he was game. You know, he saw
he got it.
What you were doing, and he also recognized that everybody was too paralyzed with, you know, all of a sudden being called out.
And he also, which I had a great deal of respect for later, did the scene right there. Yeah. He didn't have to.
Yeah.
And I appreciated the fact that he was willing to continue the performance.
Yeah.
And what was great about it was that people were really pissed off. People were really angry. They were like, how dare you do that? I was like, how dare I do what? How dare I do a scene at a kink event? No, that's not... Oh, how dare I do a slave auction scene
at a slave auction?
Well, I didn't... Okay, so what did you expect? And so the fact that people were so riled up about it was perfect. And so I said, look, I know you didn't expect it. This was a bit of a boundary push. It was a boundary push for me. But the fact is that contextually, you asked for it. You gave permission by hosting a thing that was called a fucking slave auction. And therefore, I stepped up to the plate and brought you a slave auction. Nothing even close to the horror. I said, it would have been really terrible if I'd had a kid ripped out of my arms. Crying. How about that? Or four kids and a husband. That's what we're talking about when you do your little fucking game. Now will you please fucking think? And I'm hoping that in the next 20 years, no one will call these things slave auctions. People will have some awareness that you are invoking energy that is shitty energy.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're doing it on purpose, if it is aware and it is deliberate, then more power to you.
That's really what we're getting at with all of this, isn't it? Is, mm-hmm. like, being, playing with fire and being like, what is this? Is it fire? You see fire? You see fire? I just see whatever, like, that I feel I'm playing a video game. And you're like, no, this is real shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what is so remarkable about role play, because that was not an expensive scene to produce.
Yep.
I lost a t-shirt in the fray.
R.I.P. t-shirt.
But in terms of the emotional impact, it was pretty profound. And it didn't take a lot in terms of what we actually did, and in terms of time, but in terms of impact, it was very profound. Because the words and the energy and the staging and the reality is, this is shit that actually happened. And that's the thing, is that when you're doing role play that involves who you actually are,
right,
that energy is really very real. And I have certainly experienced that in my role play, in times when I have actually genuinely felt afraid, or genuinely been outraged or angry or trapped or hopeless, you know, or empowered and fierce. All those things have been really true in that moment.
Well, that's the magic of it, when you really get into it and you look into the face of your friend or your lover or your partner or whoever, and they're gone.
Yeah.
And they're the butler or the slave driver or the pirate or the vampire or
mm-hmm.
the daddy or the principal or whoever they are. And then you realize that when they look at you, they're also seeing somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And as humans, we're capable of that.
Yep.
So why not play with it?
Because it's awesome.
It's awesome! Well, thank you so much for sharing all of those stories.
Yeah! Thank you.
And is there anything in closing that you want to say that you feel like...
And in conclusion.
In conclusion, everybody go buy a plaid skirt. Go for it. Maybe save the swastikas later on.
I know, that's 301 level shit. I think the main thing I would say is that I encourage people definitely to give themselves permission to try things out.
Yeah.
And to give themselves that permission and to take it slowly and incrementally, and to give yourself a lot of compassionate pats on the back if the sum total of your role play fantasy involves you telling someone the story as you both, you know, bust out your vibrators and get yourselves off.
Mm.
Up to and including importing Bavarian goats and, you know, having the Yodley He Who Sound of Music thing leading up to your Nazi escape scene. Like, if you need all that shit, that's great. If all you need is someone whispering into your ear, this is what you're going to do for me tonight, you're never going to tell anyone. Wow. All of those things in that full range have amazing power, and when we allow ourselves to access that power, you're really tapping into some very deep stuff, not just in your own subconscious, but in the collective subconscious. And that type of energy is amazing and startling and always fresh and always, in my opinion, grows us. When we do scenes that are difficult, that's growth. When we do scenes that are a lot of fun, that's growth. It's all over the map. And when you're doing role play, you can be whoever you want. You can be yourself. You can be someone else. You can be yourself in someone else. The possibilities are endless.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yay.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll have you back again.
That is awesome.
As always, Why Are People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn, and underwritten by Smitten Kitten, the progressive sex toy store for everyone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.